The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
That's Paul Johnson and the About Last Nights for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuning to Radio Memphis Around the World with me, D. American Story, and that is off their latest album, Give Up the Ghost. That is a band you need to follow. You want to talk about some power, pop, rock, and they've done it right. They brought the old school sound to the new school vibe. This is one band you must follow, okay? Make sure you check them out. Paul Johnson, the About Last Nights. You can find them on Facebook. You can also find them at pauljohnsonmusic.com. And if you do it because you heard it here, make sure that you tell them that D said hey. All right. Well, this is the time. And again, earlier in the show when we were talking, you guys have we've mentioned this. You've seen the logos going around, and you've seen this really cool stamp, and it says Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series. And you know, and it's a very, 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 very cool thing that we've started. It's a new thing, and it's actually what I've done is in conjunction with Ken Barr Films, we're bringing more insight to the table for a lot of our emerging artists, a lot of entertainers in the industry. You know, by sitting down with some of the best pros behind the scenes, okay? They're the ones that have done it all. They're the ones that know the tips and tricks. They're the ones that have the stories. They're the ones that have the advice. And these are one of those moments that, you know, more and more that we kind of got into this, and the more that we got to really sit down and talking with particular people, especially the road crew, we realized that this was stuff that we needed to share with you. And because it's going to help you grow, and it's going to help you get a little better in your quest in this music industry. And, you know, and just think about it, you know, and I say this every time we talk about the Road Crew at Road Crew Radio Series. You what about that record? You know, that record that you just bought and you're like, oh my God, my mind is blown. This is amazing. And, you know, in the live concert with all the stuff that goes on and all the lights and all the gadgets, you know, and all the phenomenal things that happen. And or you go to some event and, you know, at some bar, you know, or some pub or whatever, and, you know, things are just so amazing, and it puts you in such a light and such a mood. You know, there are people that are responsible for that. All right. So, you know, as we go on, like I said, we've done several. We've done a couple. You know, today is no different. So today's Saturday, July the 22nd. We are taking the opportunity, and I have been given the cool privilege to be able to talk to a gentleman who is also the owner and president of Event on Sand Incorporated in Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, Dan Stevenson, all right, he is probably one of the industry's most seasoned producers and tech directors that you will find, period, on the planet, okay? He has held positions in all levels of production. He's done technical direction. He's been a stage manager. He's been a producer. He's been a director. He's been a set designer. He's also done film and video producing. He's actually probably worked in the majority of the world's major venues, from stadiums to convention centers, as well as hotels and resorts. Now, as a technical director, his experience does include large-scale projects. And, of course, you know, you got to think IBM, Eminem, Mars, BMC, Software, JD Edwards, Panasonic. List goes on and on and on. And even as a production and stage manager, his experience includes TNN Music Awards. He's done the Goodwill Games. He's done HBO Comedy Arts Festival. He's done the NBC's concert series Rock and Roll Tonight. You guys remember that? That was such a fantastic thing that busted out talent. Well, he was a part of all of that, you know. And one of those things where you may not realize about Dan Stevenson is that he is absolutely bona fide an alumni of the rock and roll business. He's worked with Alice Cooper. He's worked with Julio Iglesias. He's worked with Stone Temple Pilots. He's worked with Blondie. He's worked with a ton. I can continue on and on. He's even done a stint as a tour manager for Ringo Starr, okay? I can continue on, but I would rather much just talk to him live on the air with and have you guys listen in our conversation and see what he's got going on. How you doing, Dan?
I'm good, D. How are you doing this morning? Good afternoon, sorry.
That's okay. Your morning, my afternoon. I'm fantastic. I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time down and talking with us and being part of the Road Crew Radio Series for Radio Memphis. You're amazing.
Happy to be here.
Oh my goodness! You know, it was funny because I was telling everybody, obviously, you know, some of your stuff, and you know, I had to cut your resume in half because otherwise, I'd spend the entire show telling everybody what you've done. and the beautiful thing is that you and I have been able to spend some time on the phone, you know, for the past week or two, and kind of get to know each other. And I think one of the things that I appreciated the most about some of the stories that you've told me was the one that you told me about when you got started, and it all basically started with the newspaper route.
It's so funny to me that you fixate on the newspaper thing. You can't wait to get me to talk about that.
Well, I got to get you started somewhere, sweetheart. Come on now.
No, no. Well, no, the interesting thing about it is it has everything to do with how I got going. When I was a kid, from when I was 10 years old till I was 14, I delivered newspapers. And a guy came along and bought a huge parcel of land at the bottom of the street. He was building custom homes. And as he would build another home, they would become, these new homeowners would become my new customers.
Right.
And eventually, he and his family, he built a house for he and his family, and they became my customer. And he was a really cool guy. He was a minor league baseball player in his past.
Okay.
And he would clear huge parcels of undeveloped land for us to play baseball on. And, you know, I thought what he was doing was pretty cool and it looked like fun, and I'd strike up conversations with him. And when I was 14 years old, we got friendly.
Okay.
And when I was 14 years old, I asked him for a job. I had enough of this newspaper crap. I was in high school then.
Okay.
And I asked him for a job, and without batting an eye, he put me to work, and the guy taught me the carpenter trade.
Oh, wow.
So while I was in high school, there was a team of guys in New Jersey, where I grew up, that produced musicals in schools, and they had developed this reputation and were extremely successful at making money in these schools because of the caliber of quality that they put into these shows. These are actual off-Broadway guys.
Wow.
One guy was a Directors Guild member making movies in New York.
Okay.
They had a Broadway choreographer that they would bring in, and they were actually making money for these schools. And they went around the state and produced these events in these schools. And they aspired at once. What they would do is, if they had some kind of electrical situation, they needed somebody to tie in dimmers or whatever it happened to be, they'd shop through the students that were involved in the production until I found somebody that had a dad or an uncle or whatever that was an electrician to come in and tie up dimmers.
Right.
Well, this one particular year, they had aspirations of building a two-story set that they could dance on top of, and it also had to be able to roll on and off the stage.
Oh.
And they went through the pipeline, and nobody came up with somebody that could do that. And the student said, you know, there's a guy that goes to school here that could probably build this thing, and they sought me out.
Already they're seeking you out, and you're in high school. That's fantastic.
And they came to me and said, he told me what his vision was, and said, could you do something like this? Would you be interested in helping us out? And I said, yeah, sure, I can do this. So I said to him, Saturday, cool? He said, yeah. So I went in there. I said, here's the material I need. Have it sitting there 9 o'clock Saturday morning. I went in and knocked this thing out for them.
Oh, wow.
So then he said, well, we'd like to have a ramp off the front of the stage into the audience. Yeah, sure, I can do that. Build them a ramp. We want to have this other thing, this table that people can dance on, and just build them that. Next thing he says is, well, you know, we have all these lights to hang. Could you figure out a way to hang some pipe in the ceiling of the auditorium? Sure, I can do that. So now I'm in the rigging business.
Okay.
So then he says, I said, how about these lights? You want me to hang all these lights for you? Well, can you do that? Yeah, sure. I can put a C-clamp on a pipe. Give me a plan. Gave me a plan. Now I'm in the lighting business.
Well, that's simple, isn't it?
You know, the PA system in this auditorium isn't very good. What can you do something about audio? I borrowed the PA system from my band that I played in.
Okay.
I played drums in.
Okay.
Now he's got a PA. So one thing leads to another, and year after year now, they start taking me with them and making me part of the team, and that's how the thing got going.
Wow. Wow. And that's it. And that right there is ultimately your first start as far as in training, you know,
Well, not only that, but these guys were so well connected that my first real professional salvo was in the summer between my junior and senior year, through people that I'd met through them, I went on the road with Jesus Christ Superstar that summer.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry. Hair was that summer.
Whoa,
Superstar
okay.
Superstar came later.
Oh, wow. Holy smokes. And so you were able to do that. And so, you know, so doing those shows and doing the Broadway stuff, I mean, is really kind of where you got that start, you know, for event production and road crew and stuff like that. And this was this something that, you know, and for those of you who've tuned in, I'm talking to Dan Stevenson, it's part of the Road Crew radio series for Radio Memphis. You started this and you realized, hey, I like this, or did you even know that this was what you were going to do for your world and for your life?
Well, there was two, yeah, there's two things about that. It's sort of, and anybody that you talk to in this, I don't care what they try and tell you, it's a sickness. I mean, you get it right away.
Yes.
And Pete Runcello, the guy who was one of the guys on this group of individuals that went in to produce these events, he was in the film business at the time. He was in a production manager for a bunch of major films. I worked on The Wiz, and I worked on Superman with him, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Wow.
But he was the one that said to me, you know, you got something, kid, and you should pursue this. But yeah, it gets in your blood straight away.
Okay.
Either it gets in your blood or it doesn't. And if it does, it hooks you.
It hooks you, and you're in. So you start doing these things. How does your world transition to where you get into rock and roll? I mean, is this like somebody knows somebody, and then you wind up, you know, on a tour, or how does this work for you?
Yeah, I started in legit theater, obviously, with, like I said, Hair and Superstar and Tommy and Godspell and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, through lighting people, and I was, actually what happened, like, the carpentry thing got me into it, but what really stemmed my interest and got me going was the lighting thing. That's really what my, theatrically, that's what my craft was lighting.
Okay.
And I, like you said, through somebody, the next thing I know, somebody's pitching me to do a rock show. And when I started to do the rock and roll shows, that was a cakewalk for me. After the discipline of the legitimate theater, that was pretty easy for me. The first tour I did was Taj Mahal.
Oh, wow. Holy smokes.
We were doing colleges. You know, in those days, it was the days when, long before acts went out with productions, so every place you went, you had to pick up local sound and lights. And that's what I was doing, lights for any, you name them,
right,
in colleges. That was the big deal.
And of course you worked all that deal out, and that's how it came about. So as you're doing this, Dan, you start on these different things, and you start on these shows. At what point do you feel like oh my God, I've got my big break?
Excuse me. The first one was, these guys, all of these college shows that I was doing, I got very friendly with a guy who owned a sound company that I kept getting paired with.
Okay.
And he had connections. He had connections to agents in New York, and he owned the guy who was head of an agency that booked acts into colleges.
Right.
So we were doing all of his stuff. And through this guy who owned the sound company, he had an opportunity to do a Mel Lemore show at the Metropolitan Opera.
Okay.
And the producer's vision of how to produce this show and what it should look like, believe it or not, was detrimental that they had chose the Metropolitan Opera, because it was Mel Lemore, this tiny little girl, and what their idea was they wanted her, this little girl, to perform on top of the orchestra pit and put the orchestra on stage. So you had this little girl on this huge expanse of the Metropolitan Opera Theater.
Oh, wow.
Well, not one light in the Metropolitan Opera House, believe it or not, hits that orchestra pit.
Really?
So, right. So somebody had to come up with some idea how to light this show. And Roscoe, the guy from the sound company, he said to me, you want to pitch something? And I said, yeah, I was 22 years old. I didn't know any better. I said, sure, I'll pitch something.
Why not?
And I came up with this idea with some basic technology that I was using for rock and roll shows and some creative thought into a dozen follow spots. And I got the job, and I did it, and it was successful to the point that the lighting got really favorable mention in the New York Times. So that was kind of...
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
That was kind of the big deal.
That's a huge deal.
The big deal was, to make a long story short... was getting the opportunity down the road, and I'll tell you fill in any of the blanks that you want to hear.
Sure.
But the big opportunity came when I was working on Teddy Pendergrass's tour. I was the electrician. I was working for a lighting company.
Sure.
And Joe Gannon was the producer of this show. Now, Joe Gannon was the guy who invented who along with Shep Gordon, his manager, and Alice Cooper, invented the whole Alice Cooper concept. Joe was the big guy that you wanted to bring in for your show, if in the rock and roll business, if you wanted to be wanted it to be more than a bunch of guys standing in front of an amp line.
Ah, got you.
And through my experience with Teddy Pendergrass and with my theatrical background, Joe was all about having me around.
Ah.
So I did this Teddy Pendergrass tour for him. It's finished up, and 2 weeks later, I get a call from him, and not asking me if I'll do it, not telling me what it is, calls me on a Saturday and says, you have to be at a live in L.A. on Tuesday.
Oh, you didn't even get a choice.
No, I didn't even know. No choice, not what it was, no nothing. So he brought me to Vegas, L.A., and the company, Alive Enterprises, the management company, had just picked up Frankie Valli, and he took me to Vegas, and I did everything. I did the set, the lights, I directed the show, I did everything for him.
Oh, wow.
And then sort of 4 or 5 months later, he calls me back and he says, you need to be in L.A. again. I want you to take care of the props and all of the staging effects for the Alice Cooper tour.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, Joe, I'll do that.
Sure.
And oh, by the way, Dan, we also want you to be the production manager.
Okay, so now that not only do you have to get all of those things together, so now you're in charge of this other stuff too, and therefore it's all yours. So now you've got to figure this out.
Right. So once I landed with those guys, that was what brought me Luther Vandross and Blondie and Teddy and Alice and Frankie Valli and Raquel Welch and all of these other acts that they had. I had something to do with all of that stuff.
Well, you know, that makes sense to me, Dan, because of your theater background. What they needed you for is they needed you to make sure that you could help them put on a show. You know, that everybody was really, really kind of into as far as coming to a concert. And you were actually helping putting together an experience. Now, Alice Cooper, that was an experience. It's just all in its own by itself, you know. But every show is concept is different. And so that's, you know, that takes somebody that's able to see it, you know, from different sides of the fence. And, of course, you know, obviously with what we're talking about in the Road Crew you know, radio series, you know, Ken Barr, you know, I met Kenny. And of course, you know, we did an interview and we talked. And, you know, we talked about the We Are the Road Crew. And fast forward, this is where we're at because we're getting to know all of you guys. And I had, you know, and for me, getting to know everybody that's kind of part of this inner group, you know, and actually has been able to do stuff, you know, from that. You, out of everybody, without you having come out and said things to me, you know, I have figured out that, okay, this is the person that was kind of in charge. Or had the direction, you know what I mean? Or had the insight, you know, for some reason, you know? And how was it when you were able to, you know, get in with the group and you know, how does you know, Ken Barr come into play? You know, how does you know, Kevin Walsh and everybody start coming into play for you?
Yeah. You need a little background to understand that too. I eventually, and again, I'll shorten the story just to make the point to answer your question.
That's okay, because like I said, look, sweetheart, and for those of you who've tuned in, I'm talking to the coolest dude on the planet, Dan Stevenson. And here in a minute, we'll probably have to stop down to a commercial, play a song, and then we're going to come back. I'm talking to you because I got you now. So the background story,
I'm here.
You're here. Okay, so we're talking about, you know, I had mentioned, you know, Kevin Walsh and, you know, Kenny, you know, Ken Barr and everybody else. So you're going to give me some background.
Yeah. So now I'm at Alive, and eventually, you know, I became Alice's tour manager, and then from that, I graduated to that I was the one that fielded all the calls, and I was taking care of all of the day-to-day management affairs for Alice.
Wow.
And then he sort of took a hiatus for a while, and Joe Gannon came to me again, and now he's got Julio Iglesias in the pipe.
Okay.
So I went and spent 5 years with Julio Iglesias, which was a monumental, which is a million stories in itself.
That's
I mean,
crazy.
You couldn't ask for better education into an international goings-on of this business.
Wow.
And when I finally had enough of that and decided I didn't want to be on the road anymore, I'd said goodbye to Julio, and I wasn't off the road for 2 weeks, and I get a call from Europe from Joe Gannon and Alice Cooper. And the Poison album is out there now, and it's going crazy, and it's the most successful album of his career. And they just went through this miserable horror show in Europe, not knowing what was going to happen with this record. Well, it exploded. They did something like, you know, Kenny can tell you, they did something like 25 dates in 28 days or something.
Wow.
And they had to come back to the States, and they wanted to grow the show a bit. they weren't happy with some of the personnel, and they called me and said, asked me if I would get involved. They had to come over right away and do a huge Canadian stretch in the wintertime. And they said, will you help us out? And I said, nope, I'm not doing this anymore.
So they talked to me.
Finally, I said, all right, I'll tell you what. Because it's you guys, I'll come out there for the Canada thing. I'll put all the right bodies in place. I'll get the show on the road. And you can have 2 weeks, and then that's it. I'm done. Well, 4 years later, I'm still doing it. So when I met the show in Canada, that's when I inherited Kenny and Batty. They were on the show.
Inherited. And by the way, yes, Batty is tuned in all the way from Birmingham. He's actually having a beer, and he sends love and smooches and kisses and stuff as well.
Whenever it is and wherever he is, he's having a beer. So that's redundant, what you just said.
Well, he also wants to let you know that he still makes a mean onion and toast. You know, if you're needing some, apparently. So apparently, there's a story with that too.
Yeah, there is. Tell Batty that I need it under different circumstances than I got it the last time.
I don't even want to know. So you get in and 4 years into this, 4 years later, and you guys are rocking and rolling. And so for you, you know, for you doing road crew and for you doing tour managing and everything else, it's now ultimately become your responsibility to find out, you know, your team. And one of the things that I'm trying to do, you know, with some of the series is not only be able to talk to cool guys like yourself, but also let everybody know this is a crazy business. We have there's a method to this madness, you know, and of course, you know, it's not just showing up these days. It's not showing up and just throwing the stuff on the stage and, you know, and going about it. There's stuff going on, you know, and, you know, and how do you figure out who it is that you're going to choose? How do you figure out who your team is going to be?
Well, you know, that takes time, but it becomes, you know, to make a long story short again, that becomes second nature after a fashion. In fact, I'll tell you something, you'll get it straight away, is me telling you just now that when I met up with this thing in Canada, that's when I inherited Batty and Kenny.
Yes.
I also brought with me to that thing Mickey Goodwin and Putter.
Putter, yes, I've had a chance to chat with Putter. Putter's coming up on Radio Memphis, Memphis Metal Mondays, this coming Monday night for his interview. And, you know, Putter is quite interesting. Putter has some very interesting stories. Putter is, I figured out that when break open in case of emergency, apparently you had to hand it to Putter. You know, and he speaks. He speaks very
well. Did he tell you that?
No, actually, it was something that I got because with Putter, it was okay. They needed this to go over here, and it was, you know, whether there was mud, whether there was this, whether there was a hole, whether there was, you know, 2x4s, whether there was planks. It was like you just do it. I mean, of course, you know. Then there was the cherry picker story, asking for.
I'll tell you the great thing about him too is for me. Was no matter what I asked him or told him to do, he never asked me why or added an I or Tommy run up the side of the building. Well, he's got a reason for it. I'm going to run up the side of the building.
He's going to do it. Well, he spoke very fondly, you know, of the relationship that he had with you in all the years and all the tours and all the stuff that you guys were able to do together. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, you guys, you know, just like a band, you know, you guys have to develop a relationship where, you know, it's that is your band, you know, and you have to be able to depend on these guys to be able to pull their weight and do their stuff. Putter was very cool. I'm look forward to catching up with him on Monday, you know, for sure. Absolutely. But I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break, okay? So I don't want you to go anywhere. I'm going to put you on hold, Dan, okay? I'm going to do a commercial break. I'm going to play a song. And then when we come out of that song, we're going to come back, you know, and talk with you some more for the Road Crew Radio Series. And for those of you that are tuned in, I am hanging out with Dan Stevenson. I know he's got some more stories. I have one specifically I do want to bring up. I do know a little bit about it. But I want him to tell everybody because I know the two individuals are tuned in. So I just want to get a response for them as well. So you guys, you don't want to go anywhere. You're hanging out with me, Dee. This is Radio Memphis Around the World. That's Raised by Gods for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuning in to Radio Memphis Around the World with me, D, Red Dressed Woman. What's very cool about that song, what's very cool about that band, is that is a cross-country collaboration. In fact, the cross-country collaboration includes Terry Glaze. You guys remember Terry Glaze? We do here in Memphis because he was part of Lord Tracy and then went on to be eventually part of Pantera at one point in time, early in the, like, in the glam days. You guys remember that? And of course, it's also another collaboration between Mike Harrington. Now, Mikey actually records the drums in L.A. and then sends the tracks to Terry on the East Coast. And then Terry writes the songs to Mike's drums, plays all the other instruments, and then sends it, you know, and then sends the, you know, the finished tunes back to Mike, where he actually, you know, gets to hear for the first time, and, you know, it's kind of fun. So they go kind of back and forth. That right there is just a ton of fun. We've been able to talk to Terry before here on Radio Memphis and had some fun with him, and just, you know, it's just a joy to see him still doing what he's doing. Now, in the meantime, because you guys know that, you know, we're hanging out on Radio Memphis Around the World right here on Saturday, July the 22nd. We're also in the middle of a Radio Memphis Road Crew radio series brought to you by Ken Barr. And today we are talking to Dan Stevenson. And again, one thing you have to understand about this gentleman, he is probably one of the coolest producers and tech directors you're ever going to find on the planet anywhere. He's got his own company, Events on Sand Incorporated in Las Vegas. And we're in the middle of some of the stories. And, you know, and of course, we're getting kind of to some of the meat of the stuff. So we're going to bring him back on. Hey, honey. Hey, Dan, how are you, honey?
I'm good.
Good, good. Everything okay?
Lovely day. Lovely day here in the desert. Thank you.
Lovely day. Wait, hang on one second. I got to turn one thing down. I've got all kinds of stuff going on. It was like all of a sudden I got like four things going into my ear, and it's like, okay, I want to focus on you. So I got it all good. So yeah, hanging out in the desert and stuff. Now, some of the stuff that, and for those of you who've tuned in, you know, I'm talking to Dan Stevenson. Tell me a little bit about where you do now.
Well, after the, let's see, when did this all start? After Poison. Somebody had been badgering me for years to get involved in corporate shows, and I never did because my vision of a corporate show was, until I got into it and found out that it was completely contrary.
Oh, nice.
My vision of a corporate show was always that there was some guy at a lectern standing in front of the screen. What is there to that? Why am I going to, you know, I just 53 years with Alice Cooper. How exciting is that going to be? Well, the first one I did, it was at the end of the Poison tour. There was one Japanese leg left, and management couldn't decide whether they were going to take it on or not. So in the meantime, an opportunity came up for me to do what was professed to me to be a pretty good, pretty big corporate show.
Okay.
And needed my skill set, but I really didn't ask any questions. I needed to move on in a job, and they couldn't make up their mind. And I knew that even if they picked Japan to do it, Mickey and Putter and I had spent huge amounts, an inordinate amount of time in the last 5 years in Japan with Julio. And good preparation over there, they make it really easy for you. So I knew that in the worst case scenario, if I took on this other project, I could do all the preparation work and just leave it to Putter and he would get it done. So that, and that's ultimately what happened.
Okay.
So I said yes to this corporate show. And my delusions of a guy standing on a stage with a screen and a podium went to crap, because this job was the launch of the Infinity brand.
Oh, wow.
It was a $7 million event, and it was over 100 truckloads alone of steel. It was five times the steel structure of the Rolling Stones stage.
Oh, my God.
It took the plan, the quarter inch scale plan for this show was 12 feet long.
Holy smokes. So
it took 3.5 weeks to build it, with two 12-hour shifts of 100 local guys and probably 40 or 50 production vendor and production guys on this show working two 12-hour shifts a day. It took 3.5 weeks to build it. So that was me. Welcome to the corporate world.
Oh, your first gig. Nice. See, you don't, you know, one thing I figured out about you is that, you know, you don't go small.
Oh, that was huge. Are you kidding? That was huge fun. And then,
yes.
So I started doing, once I discovered that this corporate thing was what it was, I was all about it. So the cool thing was that you were away for 2 weeks or something like that when you finally, it took eons of time to prepare for it. And, you know, because press events and stuff like that, you got like 8 minutes to launch this new product. If any of it screws up in that 8 minutes, this brand could sink or swim by what it is that you do.
Oh, wow.
So I found out when the corporate stuff, you know, again, to make a long story short, not elaborate much on it, but, you know, I've done things like, you know, make five cars, drive out of a movie and jump over walls. And
that is crazy.
You know, I did the launch of the Xbox, which was, you can well imagine how crazy that was.
And of course.
All of that kind of stuff. And then the technical service company I started working for in the corporate world, somebody knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, wound up to be the proposal to do to produce the Stone Temple Pilots tour. So guess who qualified for that?
Of course, that had to be you. That's crazy.
So that was me back in the business, and that particular tour too. The first guy I hired for that show, well, the first two guys I hired for that show, of course, were Putter and Kenny.
Of course. And of course.
So I did STP, and then it was back to corporate shows for years. And then the last thing I did, that touring, rock and roll touring business, was I substituted for the tour manager for a summer with Ringo.
Ringo Starr. You did some fantastic stuff. You know, it's funny because one of the special things about you, Dan, is that not only are you brought in, you know, to do these projects, and not only are you brought in to do these tours and stuff like that, and this is a common thing that keeps coming up in my head every time I hear a story that you talk about. One of the reasons I feel like that you're being brought in is that you yourself are also helping them brand. You know, make a brand, you know, just by simple, you know, virtue of what it is that you put together, either on a stage or, you know, either on a screen or whatever the case may be, you know. And is that, you know, is that something that you kind of understood, or you just knew how to plug in with these people?
Well, not in the early going, because I was just a hired gun to make impossible stuff happen. But as time goes on, well, it's true. And that Infinity show was ridiculous.
I did not realize that, but yes.
As time goes on and you establish yourself with particular clients, they start taking you in the boardroom to hear what this brand is about, what they're trying to do and what it does. And eventually it comes to pass where how this thing is presented is coming out of guys like me. It's coming out of our head.
Ah, big statement.
You know, I was the one that said, hey, let's drive these cars out of a movie.
And they're looking at you like, you can do that?
Yeah.
Did you know you could do that when you told them that?
Well, I was pretty sure.
you knew exactly where I was going with that.
But there have been those things that I walked out of those meetings, and associates of mine that I brought to the meeting would go, What were you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking that we need to go home now, and we need to figure out how we're going to deliver what we promised them. But that's the beauty, that's the business, man. That's the creative spark when doing something like, you know, that's the challenge. And it seems like that you're this guy though that you'll take that challenge, man, and you'll hit it head on, going, yeah, let me have it.
I'll tell you the cool. In case you're going to ask me this, I was thinking about this earlier. The cool is probably the coolest, most out there thing that I ever did. You want to hear about that?
I do, because I do want to know about that.
Yeah, I produced a centennial celebration.
Okay.
For the women of the royal family of Saudi Arabia.
Wow! Look at you.
It was insane.
I mean, walk me through this. So this event just shows up, and they say, hey, can you help us with this? Is this how this works?
No, here's how, I'll tell you how it came about. It was this, every year there's a festival called the Janadria Festival in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And it's tantamount to our Super Bowl in terms of the action and the scuttlebutt and the TV audience and all of that stuff that happens in the country. And there's a huge fairgrounds, for lack of a better word, that'll make you and your listeners understand what it's about. It's something that's tantamount to one of our state fairs.
Okay.
Where there's a huge camel racing track, which is like our Churchill Downs, for lack of a better word, and there's a big, like a gymnasium kind of, like a college gym sort of venue. And there's a little theater, and there's all these areas that, there's an area for Medina, and an area for Jeddah, and an area for Mecca, and the artisans, and the craftsmen, and the singers, and whatever. And it looks like, you know, this little part of the village looks like Medina, and it's all the characteristic of these locations are in it. And all the guys from the country come to this event.
Okay.
There's also, and it's such a big event that there's, they have all these fancy tents out there. In fact, the first time I went to look at the grounds, the men's event was going on. There's a men's and women's event, obviously, in Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
The men's event was going on, and Prince Charles, for instance, was staying in one of these tents as a guest of the Crown Prince.
Oh, wow.
So because it was the centennial, the Crown Prince, who was Abdullah at the time, his daughter-in-law, and the Jamadria Festival is under the auspices of the Crown Prince. It's run by the Saudi National Guard, which is the absolute elite of the Saudi armed forces and so on.
Oh, wow.
So his daughter-in-law said to him, since it's the centennial, and what would happen for the women's event is the women would be relegated to whatever the guys left there. And it was nothing like the men's event. You know, they would have poetry readings and stuff like that. Where at the men's event, in this auditorium, it would be this huge TV event. And they would have sword fights. And they'd fill the auditorium with 4 feet of dirt and be riding camels and horses and sword fights.
They went old school, yeah.
And the women would just inherit, when the men walked away, they just inherited whatever's left. So they had poetry reading and little singers going on, and she decided that because it's the centennial, she's going to try and take this up a notch, and she asked her father-in-law if she could go and do this.
Okay.
And he sort of went, well, yeah, sure, here's a couple of million bucks, what kind of trouble could she get in? Well,
she called you. He's the guy that makes cars come out of the screen. Let's talk to him.
So she watches, well, I'm down the road, so she watches the Academy Awards show.
Okay.
And she decides that she wants the guy who designed the Academy Awards show to design her show. It was Roy Christopher at the time. And she calls him, gets in touch with him, and he says, well, I can't do it, but how about this guy? And he turns her on to a guy named Jeremy Railton. Now, Jeremy is one of the primo art directors, scenic designers on the planet.
Oh, wow.
And background with him was in Putter and Batty, all these guys can attest to it. He designed all the Alice Cooper sets. He did Luther Vandross with us. He did,
okay,
Blondie with us. He did all of this stuff. I've known him forever.
Okay.
He's got 3 Emmy Awards, 2 of which are for the opening and closing ceremonies of the Olympics.
How beautiful.
He's the guy now that designs all the interiors of all these shishi casinos in Macau and Singapore and all of that sort of thing.
He's that guy.
In fact, I just finished a job with him a couple weeks ago here in Vegas.
Okay, so he's that guy. Okay.
Yeah, so he recommends Jeremy, and the princess and her group come over here and they meet with Jeremy. And he goes, yeah, sure, before asking any of us anything. And he calls me and says, can you come and see me? And he tells me what this thing is. And once we get a feel for it, we realize that there's nobody producing this thing. Nobody's gluing the elements of this thing together. So I eventually become the technical director and the producer of this huge thing that's in the middle of the desert.
That is so crazy.
Just by virtue of the fact, just think of this alone, just by, forget what we did production-wise, just think about the fact that men can't see women sing or dance ever in Saudi law.
And you had
so to I have to camouflage the fact that all my guys are in the building while they're rehearsing and doing this show. Just think of the challenge of that alone.
And you had to deal with all of that on top of them being able to have that event and not piss anybody off and not break any laws and not get thrown out of the country and, you know, and put on something that, you know, that ranks up there with the Academy Awards. That's pretty brilliant. That's pretty brilliant.
Yeah. Here's an interesting thing for you.
Hmm.
I had my hands pretty full with this. So the production manager that I chose for that job was Ken Kaler.
Okay, Mr. Ken Kaler. Yes, I'm going to be catching up with him tomorrow on the phone. We're going to have a nice little chat, and hopefully he's going to become part of the Road Crew Radio series, because Ken Kaler himself has quite the story. Yes, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be fantastic. You know, how cool is that?
The funniest thing that came out of that was, the director, a woman named Nora Sekef, who was a Saudi national, she'd been growing up in a pretty elite, sort of affluent Saudi family, and she lived in London. She wrote this show and she directed it and stuff, and she came to me one day and she said, because you couldn't see these guys, they were mixing from audio from a reference monitor buried in this thing we call the duck blind, so nobody could see them way up in the seating in this arena. And she came to me one day and she said, we can't, and there was 42 wireless microphones, and this is 20 years ago, so it was the beginnings of the wireless microphone. And there were 42 of those things on the stage, and I picked Chris Carlton, the guy who had been with me forever, with Julio.
Wow.
Because I needed somebody with the patience of a saint, and he came over there and did a remarkable job with this. And she came to me one day and said, we can't hear the voices in the room. And I said, well, Nora, you tell me how to skin that cat, because if I can't, none of us can walk in the room while we're rehearsing. You tell me how I'm going to fix it. I mean, I can't hear your problem unless I can go in there.
Right.
So they dressed me up like a Saudi woman.
No, they did not. There's a picture of this.
They put the head thing on. And the funny thing was, you know, all of the princess's friends, they were these beautiful, petite Saudi women. And they gave me this first thing, and they could wrap it like halfway around me. That was a joke. And her mother happened to be there that day, who was a chunky little woman, but she was like a foot and a half shorter than me. So they could wrap the thing around me, but it came like just below my knees. They wrapped the head thing around me. So here's this giant hulking figure with like giant sneakers walking around in this place.
Nobody noticed?
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Please tell me that there's a picture of this.
Well, Christian Choi, who was the lighting control operator, apparently has pictures of this, yeah.
I love it. So the beauty of the stories of things that you have to do in order to make these magical moments happen. And of course, I'm sure the ladies absolutely just loved it.
Oh, the show was awesome.
I'm talking about you in a get-up, you in a skirt.
Oh, they love. Yeah, they were beside themselves.
Of course. You know, it's funny. And for those of you who've tuned in, you know, I'm talking to Dan Stevenson. Back to, you know, one of the things, and since we're talking stories and stuff, and I have to tell you how much I appreciate you and sharing stories. One of the biggest things, and one of my biggest takeaways from you, is ultimately that you really do love what you do. And you know, and it's something as simple as, you know, some of the carpentry. And again, that's always going to be stuck in my head, because people always, they never know when the opportunity, you know, knocks, and they never know when the door opens, you know what I mean? And you knew, like, at the age of 14, you just started going. And whether you realize that or not, I'm telling you. But one of the fun stories I think you've shared with me was that when Alice Cooper and the group decided that you needed to come back, and you wanted to go ahead and make a couple of things clear, and you had some stipulations, you know, and you had some, you know, some things in place. And one of the stipulations included that you had to have a particular bus. And that particular bus was only to be able to have 6 people on it. Yes, you remember the story?
Uh-huh.
You remember the story I'm talking about? Yes,
I do.
And of course, I think one of the things I'd like for you to share, and only because I know that England is tuned in, is how you chose people to be on this bus.
Well, it was part of it. It was actually in my head all along. It was really easy. It was cut and dry. But the 4 of us in particular were getting on in years, and you know, we'd had it. What we wound up with was the mayhem bus, which was all the kids and the lighting guys and the riggers and all that, and the wine and cheese bus, which was where I lived.
Oh, nice.
And it was Dancer McCullough, the audio engineer, Goodwin, and myself. That was obvious.
Right.
So after Canada, we did the Grammy show, and then we had like 3 weeks off or something. And that's when I made this deal with Shep and Alice. And when it became known that we were going to have these 2 buses, and there was only 6, one of them was only a 6-banger, Kenny and Batty started to, like, hint at how I was going to sort out who was going to be part of this group of 6. Well, they didn't catch on to the 6 part initially.
Nice.
So they kept, you know, throughout the day, buses are going to show up. There's a gig in Tampa, and the buses are going to show up that day, and probably somewhere around the neighborhood of 64 times, the two of them asked me in one way or another how that was going to come down. So I said, you know, I kept thinking to myself, well, there's six on this bus. They know of four of them. They can't figure this out, but they kept asking me. So I kept going along. Yeah, well, you know, guys, I got to be careful that I don't chooch anybody, and, you know, I got to be smart about how I do this, and that kind of malarkey. So they still seem like they still haven't put two and two together and realized that it adds up to six. So we're getting ready. We added the shower. We're getting ready to leave that night. And they said to me once and for all, hey, so what have you decided? Where are we going? I said, I'll tell you what, guys. Here's what I want you to do. I want you guys, here's how we'll decide. The two of you, I want you to stand on the street next to the bus. The four of us will watch to make sure it's all official. You two guys are going to shotgun Budweisers. And the first guy that stumbles is out.
and they thought this was a good idea.
They thought they were gonna if that's what it takes. They were fixated on it. So they were fixated more than doing the math of adding two and four, coming up with six. So there they are on the street with four of us sitting on a bus at the table watching them. And the two of them did this thing until somebody stumbled. And then I finally just went off the bus. And I said, guys, enough of this malarkey. Get on the bus.
Both of you get on the bus.
Yeah.
And that's when they figured out that... What would you do? What would you have done without them?
Oh, well, life wouldn't have been as rosy, I'll tell you.
That's the biggest thing. That is the biggest thing with everybody, especially inherently involved. You know, some guys are tuned in and, you know, they are getting started in the business, or they're thinking, maybe I want to do some of these things. And I mean, don't you have kids, or you know, young guys or girls for that matter, that maybe come up to you and go, man, how do I get in this business? I mean, what do you even decide to tell them when they ask you these questions?
Well, you know, it's a difficult question to answer because as you go on with this program, which I'm sure you must have already experienced, as you go on with this program,
Yeah. Everybody
that's anybody, you know, I listened to Bat the other night, and if you think back to whatever he told you and whatever I told you, everybody has a completely different story.
It does. It does. And that's why I ask.
And so it's like saying, how long is a piece of string? It's really difficult to land on some kind of conventional way that you fall into this.
Right.
You know what, too? The thing you always have to consider, too, is not anybody can live like that, you know?
No.
It's one thing to have a handle on your skill sets, but the lifestyle, not everybody can do that.
That's the biggest thing, and I don't think, you know, Dan, I don't think everybody kind of realizes that, because, you know, in talking with some of the guys, I mean, and everybody, you know, has been very forthright in saying, you know, hey, it was hard on relationships, it was hard, you know, wound up getting divorced over this, you know, wound up, you know, whatever, but this is, you know, this is a thing that you do, and this is the life you lead, and that schedule, and that time, and that frame that you, the world that you live in is not normal, and it's really not.
You know, the thing is that kids these days, what makes it even more difficult, I'm not being critical at all, I'm trying to elaborate on the question that you asked me, but even to go to college, even though college programs have refined themselves and grown up a little bit,
yes.
The thing about a college program is you're doing, I don't care if you do 150 shows, you do it all in the same space.
Right.
When you get out and do what we did, no matter what you think, Every day something's different. It can be something monumental. Every day,
wow,
something is different. The rigors, it's a different roof every day. Every day. When you try and learn this in college, you know, you push a button and then the grid comes down and you put the stuff on it and off it goes. And you do it in the same confines every time you do another production.
And
with us, with what you're asking me about,
yes,
you got to give it some thought, because every day something about what you're going to do is different. Whether it's the loading dock, it's the rigging, it's the size of the stage, the placement of it, whatever it happens to be, something is going to vary tomorrow.
Right. You're exactly right.
So it's not. I'm not beating around the bush, but what you asked me is an extremely difficult. It's like I said, how long is a piece of string? It's a very difficult question to answer.
And that's a fantastic answer you just gave me, and that was that answer you just gave me. You know, Dan is an answer. You know, it tells everybody and. You know, yes, you think about this stuff with school and you think about stuff with classes or you think about stuff that, you know, everybody can go and, you know, go to a seminar, you know, go to some camp, you know, and learn how to do sound for the weekend and then, you know, do sound for the bar band, you know, at the end of your, you know, your stay and all this other great stuff. But what you're just describing is an answer. It's, you know, there's nothing that can prepare you for that. You don't know.
I mean, it's right. It's most basic nano bit creature comforts. First of all, you get on a bus every day, and you walk into the building, and the first thing is, well, where do I eat today?
Right.
You know, it's as simple as that, and then the rest of it begins. So it takes a special sort of headspace to be able to live that way.
Apparently, it takes a special headspace to live that way, you know, and to be able to do the things that you've been able to do, and you know, have family, you know, or have kids, and you know, have relationships and stuff in the mix of all of that. There has to be some really understanding people. One, two, that is your normal. You know, I joke about it not being normal, but that's your reality. That is your reality. That's how the world goes. That's how it works.
You know, and the thing is, too, is you can't fool around with who's out there doing that stuff with you. You're hanging hundreds of thousands of pounds over people's heads every day. It's not, you know, it's not fun and games.
It's not. It's serious. It's very serious stuff. You know, you're talking safety. You're talking, you know, making sure everything is in working, you know, in working order. And then on top of that, making sure that it does what it's supposed to do so that it's a fantastic show because that's what people come to see. You know, absolutely, absolutely. If you were to look back on your career and if you were to change anything about it, would you?
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty contented, and I've had the. It's not saying anything particularly about me or that I'm smarter than the next guy, but the thing about me and why I wouldn't change anything is that I've had amazing amounts of good fortune in terms of who've come down the pike with me. Not only guys that work with me, but the Joe Gannons and the Shep Gordons and so on of the world. And
right.
And you know, I had Walt Rogers, the guy that taught me to build the houses. You know, I still to this day, I use the knowledge from him every day. He's the guy that taught me how to read plans and about material handling and how to use tools and operate machinery and structure and all that stuff.
Wow.
See? You know, so. I've just, you know, the answer is that I just had really great good fortune, and I can't really, you know, land on some simple thing or some profound thing that I would change. No.
You've had a fantastic time. You have a fantastic career, and you still have a fantastic career. You're still doing stuff. You're still doing a lot of crazy cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, anything you can get into now as far as what you're doing or what you're getting into?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
People have told me over the years and I had limited experience with it with Alice Cooper and going to school at Alive Enterprises, which was again great, such great good fortune.
No doubt.
Also, what came out of that too, not to change the subject, but something you brought up before, which came out of that, was Rock and Roll Tonight. I did Rock and Roll Tonight, and that was alive too, you know. So that once again was great, good fortune.
The talent and stuff for Rock and Roll Tonight, yes, we can go into more stories with that. Yeah.
So what I'm doing now, and people have said this to me over the years, and getting older, you start to think about stuff like this. The long and short of it is that I started getting into actively pursuing getting in the artist management business.
Good for you.
And in a very short amount of time, which you know a little bit about, we discussed, in a very short amount of time, already people are seeking us. I found a really good partner. We're actively developing a bunch of new artists, some new with some not so new artists.
Nice. Very nice. It's kind of a... It's
you know,
kind
one,
of, kind of different for you, though, as far as what you've been rolling at for so long. Yes, you've dabbled.
Yeah, but you know what?
It.
Eventually, it came to pass that somebody must have said the right thing or enough of the right thing or something to get it through my head that I could I actually had the skill sets to probably make that work.
I don't see why you wouldn't.
And it's kind of a nice way to go out, you know?
Absolutely. So, absolutely, it's a nice way. Absolutely.
And it's encouraging, like I said, it's encouraging, too, that in a very short amount of time that we actually started to take it seriously, that that now, by word of mouth, we're not even to the point where we're out chasing business particularly, that people are coming to us.
Big difference. You know, you have an opportunity
yeah, yeah.
to sit down and actually work with that artist or, you know, I work with that group and it's a, you know, it's kind of, this is the part and I'm a firm believer that no matter how much technology comes up and know how much, you know, things supposedly quote unquote change, you know, as far as the industry and as far as the music business, there's a lot of pieces that still work no matter what year it is. You know what I mean? And I personally think that some of the approaches and stuff that you take, Dan, when you're dealing with things like that are things that are tried and true and have always worked no matter what. So, big difference.
Well, a big thing, too, I think about that I actually enjoy the idea of is not never being snobby about this thing. You know, if your heart's really in it, you know, you don't want to stoop to anything, but like, for the last year, I've been involved in Jennifer Lopez's residence here in Vegas.
Yes.
And the two beautiful parts of it is I'm not in charge of anything except my particular duties on the show. But I'm not the production manager. I'm not the stage manager. And it's all about, it's worked out that schedule-wise, I've been able to last a year doing it. And it hasn't interfered with my other business. And it's about going and playing with stagecraft. And it's the first, it's the first time in my life that I actually go home from work at night.
See? And look, and you actually get to enjoy it on that part too, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And it's the cool thing, it's really exciting. She's amazing. I don't know how she does it. And it's the hottest show on the planet. And it's, you know, it's exciting.
It is very exciting. By the way, Batty just sent a message. I still hate Bud. Never touch it. But that is the only way to drink that stuff. God bless you, Dan. Me and
the
Ken.
The funny thing, you know, it's funny. I got off on a tack, but to Batty's point, one thing that I was going to say, not only was the what I asked him to do insulting, but I made him do it with Budweiser.
Yes, yes.
And honestly, as God is my witness, when I was telling you about that, I thought that I have to punctuate this by saying an insult it was for Batty that I used Budweiser.
Yes, yes. And of course, he was like, we knew the whole time. We knew the whole time. We just wanted the beer. Well, honey, I want to thank you for taking time out this afternoon and out of your busy schedule, because I know you got a lot of crazy stuff going on. I know that we're also, of course, you figured out with the Road Crew Radio series that we're not done. This is kind of this is me being able to, and Ken and Ken Barr Films being able to introduce you know, characters, you know, into our play, you know, if you will, you know, as far as this industry goes. And we've got a lot of cool things that are coming down the pike, and so I know that we're going to be talking again, you know, especially on air and having some fun. You know, and I know you've got some cool things that are also, you know, kind of in the works. And so, you know, hopefully you and I'll get to talk again some more. But I want to thank you for everything you've shared with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It was an absolute joy to be here.
Well, I tell you what, if you need anything from me, you let me know, okay?
I'm sorry?
I said, if you need anything from me, you let me know.
Of course I will.
Yes. And so what I need for you to do is I need for you to enjoy your afternoon. It's a Saturday, you know.
Oh, I'll try.
Yeah, you rock out. Put your buds back in. I got some cool music coming up. You can actually rock out to us here. How about that?
Oh, right on. I'll do that.
I tell you what, we're going to talk soon, honey, okay?
All right, dear.
All right, baby. Thank you so much.
Thank you, D.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. All right, Mr. Dan Stevenson. And, you know, the funny thing about him is that I could probably have kept him on this phone for the entire show. Because for me, he was like a Pandora's box, you know. And every time we would start into a story about something, it would lead into something else. And, you know, you really, it's really amazing to learn about, you know, his career, where all he's been and what all he's done and who all he's been able to work with, you know, for the simple love of doing what he did in the very beginning. And it took him to a lot of amazing places. is. And you know, that's the thing. One of the things that, you know, we want to be able to share when we do the, you know, the Road Crew radio series, you know, we could be talking to anybody, you know, and thinking, and you're thinking, oh my God, these guys are famous, or, you know, maybe these guys have done things, or they work with some really cool people, and, you know, we'll never get there. One, they always share stories about how they got started. And let's remember something. All of these different bands and all these different groups and artists that you're hearing that are of international and national stature, at one point in time, you know, were somebody that was local. And, you know, and a lot of these guys were there on the front end with them, along with doing what they do in order to help, you know, build a band and a brand. So very, very cool lesson. Very cool stuff. You guys, make sure that you stay tuned and you pay attention, because, you know, every time you see that Radio Memphis, you know, Road Crew Radio logo pop up, it's going to be that we're talking with somebody. And this is all leading up. You know, this is just the first layer of this program and this platform, because, you know, we've got some other things. We're going to be having some tips, you know, towards the end of the month. We're going to see some appearances, and we're going to see some words coming in from Ken Barr himself. And, you know, we've got that loading into play. And we've got even more stuff that's going to be coming in the fall, you know, that's going to bring you a live element, you know, with maybe a couple roundtables. And so you guys pay attention, because we're wanting to give this back to you, and it's going to be some good stuff. In the meantime, this is Radio Memphis Around the World, and Radio Memphis Around the World is also about some music. So how about I play you some Harvest Falls? This is Waiting on the Edge, because I'm always waiting on the edge. Straight out of New Jersey, right here only on Radio Memphis.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved, and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.